Okay, we're going to continue chatting with Richard Austin about his work, The Coming of Armageddon, History's Longest Night, and we're going to take your phone calls as well on Coast to Coast AM, so stand by. And welcome back to Coast, Richard Austin with us. Richard, so we have theorized that something very strange happened to the missing Malaysian flight MH370, and it sounds like you do too.
Well, we have actually a lot of very hard evidence as to what happened. It's just the fact that nobody's paying attention to the evidence. It's a very curious situation. I was indicating that it's impossible that it went to the south and crashed in the Indian Ocean because it could not have gone through all of these hypersensitive radar systems and never be seen.
Right.
If you can pass that plane in its overall dimensions is two-thirds the size of an American football field. How could it fly through a system for hours?
Our satellites would have found it.
Yes. Well, now, if it went north, how do we have proof? Yes. We have an hour and 41 minutes of precise military tracking. We have what happened, precise information about what happened to the electronic equipment, how it was turned off and on and was depowered, put back on, all to confuse people and make the plane invisible. And finally, the actions of the hijackers, which are totally consistent with only one thing, stealing the plane.
Who could also have been the pilots.
Well,
but they did have a couple on there with stolen passports.
Well, what the conclusion is that there were two hijackers. One was a expert on the electronic communications systems of this plane. By the way, he tinkered with it and turned them off at key times.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't toggle off, for instance, the radar transponders that are used for civilian tracking.
Right, though he could have.
He didn't toggle it off, he depowered it.
Yeah.
He took the power away. Now, to do that is a very complex procedure. The ACAR system, for instance, it can get power from both sides, from the generators from both wings. And it's an extremely complicated procedure. But they did establish that they didn't really toggle off these systems, they depowered them. Now, furthermore, the way the plane was maneuvered, for instance, when they got into the no man's zone between Malaysian and Vietnamese airspace, a blind area, the pilot reversed course at about 540 miles an hour in a very tight arc. No civilian airplane pilots can pull them off a maneuver like that. That's a maneuver by a military pilot who's trained with the Boeing 777. Because when you turn the plane that tightly, you can severely damage the plane. And he was going about five. That was just before they reached Waypoint Baitod, and they were still in that blind area.
Right, and it was on its way to Beijing.
Yes, it's a night flight from Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia, where the Petronas Towers are, to Beijing. It's a regular red eye flight, 5.5 hours.
Yes, people are sleeping. They figure by the time they wake up, they'll be in China.
Well, now, you've just raised a very, very interesting point that people don't talk about. What happened to the passengers? When the plane was turned back about 210 degrees, dropped down to about 10,000 feet, and skirted the Thai border, why didn't anybody try to use a cell phone? Because you remember when we had the planes hijacked in the United States, everybody was on their cell phone.
Yes.
Well, after he reversed course, away from their predetermined route. He rose up to 45,000 feet. That's not where these planes are designed to function. It's bad for their engines.
But at that height, you can't make a call.
Well, it goes, unfortunately, we're back into the gruesome territory, George.
You suffocate everybody.
If you withhold oxygen, hypoxia sets in and everybody dies.
That's right. We had thought of that. That's absolutely correct, that you fly up that high to do one thing, kill everybody in that plane.
Now, there is no other plausible reason you would go up there and risk damaging the engines and have stall out, and maybe you can't start your engine.
That's right.
So they could have only gone up there for one purpose, to kill the people.
So what's your thoughts of why they took that plane? What are they going to do with it?
Well, I'll give you an exact answer, but let me just reiterate. If you want a whole run, I researched this plane for a year. It's on my website, page 2. You get the whole ball of wax. Why do they want it? They don't want the United States interfering with the war. They don't want to fight two people, two nations, two powerful nations at one time.
All right, but explain. Explain the why.
The Boeing 777 is a superb flying machine.
Right.
It can cruise at 600 miles an hour. It can fly at over 8,000 miles. Without refueling, if you make minor modifications, it can fly 12,000 miles. They can deliver a blow against the east or west coast of the United States with that anonymous plane from anywhere on the globe, deliver an atom bomb on Washington, D.C. That's what they're going to do with it. They're going to try to do that. We do not have a viable defense against that plane coming in low over the ocean at 600 miles an hour with radar jamming equipment.
Are they going to try to do that before there's an invasion of Russia?
Yes, about 2 months before.
So we're the ones that are going to get hit first.
Exactly. Now, just think a minute. You know the trauma that was caused by 9/11 when they knocked out these buildings?
Oh, of course.
Well, what if they wiped out Washington, D.C.?
In one swoop.
One bomb would do it. And they don't even have to get over Washington, D.C. They're flying at 600 miles an hour. And they're skirting the surface of the ocean. And that plane is the perfect device to do it. And of course, you can say, well, we'd retaliate. We don't know what happened to the plane, technically.
Right. We don't think so, at least.
But if you add up all of this information that I've assembled there, it's obvious they took it. In fact, I tell you where they landed the plane.
Where do you think it went?
Well, one of the most fascinating disputes, and this really shows how clever the Chinese are. And you got to admire these people. They are fiendishly clever. After the plane disappeared over the Bay of Bengal, and they essentially had the plane, they turned back on the satellite system.
Okay.
But they had removed all of the information sources. So what happened? You got those famous 7 pings. Do you recall?
I remember that. Yep.
Okay, so everybody says, what the heck did they turn it back on for? Because it was depowered. Well, people have counted the pings, and they've concluded the flight lasted 7.5 hours. Well, not necessarily. That was to disguise how far the plane actually went. The flight into southern China was much shorter. So they wanted to disguise that fact. So they kept the engines on. They kept releasing the pings. So everybody thought the plane actually was in the air for 7.5 hours. It wasn't. It wasn't even in the air for 5 hours.
It was already on the ground when they were still sending pings.
Now, the route to get into southern China, you'd see everybody said, well, you can't take it north because they're going to run into all those radar systems that's in eastern China, eastern India. Well, that's not the route they would have taken. If they go across northern Thailand, there's a corridor there. And I've actually visited that area where those teak forests are. It's totally uninhabited. And there's a mountain range on the left. That's the route they would have taken into Yunnan province. And that's where the plane landed.
What made you come up with this theory? Was it something in Revelation, or did you just theorize this on your own?
Well, in the book, one of Lawrence's contacts, he discovers that they start talking about this plane, and this contact tells him that's a Chinese operation and why they took the plane and why they're going to use, well, how they're going to use it. So I do mention it in the book, but I researched that for a year because it's an amazing part of this war that they're going to launch. How else could you take America out of the picture than to wipe out Washington, D.C. anonymously?
And by doing so, we're in a quagmire. We're not going to be in a position to want to attack, join, or anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. We would be totally demoralized. We wouldn't know what to do with ourselves.
So while they go in, then they immediately go in to take the eastern part of Russia.
Exactly. With the neutron bomb.
Okay. So once they do that, now here's the question, then we're going to get to some calls here. They're lining up for you, Richard. Once they go into Russia, assuming they've bombed Washington, D.C., they've nuked it, what's their next plan? Then what? There's got to be more domination here.
Well, I go into the routes that they, in the book, that they take. I've analyzed the geography of Inner Mongolia and Southern Russia and the routes that they would take. They have, I'll mention this to you, this is a very interesting point. One thing that troubled me was that until recently, China did not have a battle tank that they could have used in the sandy soil of Inner Mongolia and the soft ground of the Russian steppe.
Well, they do now.
Yes, they have this new mountain. They call it the mountain tank. So it's half the size, and it's extremely light and maneuverable.
It almost climbs.
Exactly. So they have now have the perfect tank for that invasion.
Is there going to be a retaliation by Russia?
Well, yes. Now, see, that's the tough, this was the thing that in the book I had so much trouble working out. How is Russia going to retaliate?
Because Putin isn't going to take this lying down.
Well, the way I describe it, and I base this on the art of war, is the fact that they will encourage the Russians to commit most of their forces without the Russians, of course, knowing how many troops are waiting in that tunnel.
Okay. Swarming, ready to swarm.
Ready to, and they only have to send out as many as they need. But, of course, before they have to send anybody out, they would destroy the Russian forces with neutron bombs.
Yeah, but my point is Russia's not going to take this lying down. They're going to retaliate.
Well, that's what I concluded, and they retaliate with atom bombs.
And that's where Armageddon becomes a disaster.
Well, if you want to know something very interesting, I went on Google Maps and researched, bearing in mind that there's this little town on this mountain. No one knows where the openings are to this vast tunnel system, but you can make a rough guess. And I searched for some little towns on mountaintops, and I found two very likely locations where I thought the openings of these up to the tunnel system are.
They're in China, right?
Yes. See, now the Russians will try and close up the tunnel system with by hitting it with atom bombs so the troops can get out. And if you were to say, what is Armageddon? John of Patmos does describe mountains being moved. So they try to obliterate that tunnel system to trap all of the Chinese soldiers.
And the only way to do that is to nuke those mountains.
Right.
Huh.
Try and cause landslides.
Are those soldiers there now, hidden away?
Well, we know that they have large amounts of equipment in those in that vast tunnel system. And some people say it connects all the way over to Beijing and that 200-million-meter bomb shelter. They've been constructing that tunnel for 50 years, and it's huge. Supposedly, there is even rumors they can keep a significant portion of their Air Force in there. It's a monumental construction job that began under Mao Zedong.
If we were to approach the Chinese government right now with this theory, do you think they would go, how did they find out?
I don't think they're concerned about what we know at this point.
Really? How come?
Well, because putting America aside, if it's just between China and Russia, it's no contest. Russia cannot prevail in that war. They're defending an area that's too far removed from their bases.
Right.
They don't have the troops.
Too widespread.
They can't supply the Far East. See, China would prosecute the war in two stages. They would first take over the Far Eastern territory, and then the rest of the area east of the Urals. But it would be a two-stage situation. But the fact that they can operate out of that tunnel system, they've got the neutron bomb, they have limitless replacement troops. Russia is a nearly bankrupt country now that oil is down to $30 and headed south. Russia doesn't have a hope. All they can do is make it very nasty for China. And China has made very clear if they lose 200 or 300 million people, they don't care.
And we're in shock because of what you say would have happened to Washington, D.C.
Exactly. That plane, we have not heard the last of it. It will reappear. They hijacked it. Read what I write on page 2, all that evidence I assemble.
And you've got to get our book, Someone is Hiding Something, because this matches a lot of what you've talked about, Richard. We're going to come back, and as promised, we'll take phone calls for the remaining half hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Lauren Weinstein joins me for a couple hours as we talk about incredible technology, hacking, and all that, followed by 2 hours of midweek open lines on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to come back. Those of you on hold, we'll get to your calls with Richard Austin as we talk about his work, The Coming of Armageddon. Okay, here we go. Final segment with Richard Austin, The Coming of Armageddon. And Richard, before we go to calls, where do you get your book?
Well, it's available from any book outlet. They can go on Amazon. They can order it. They can get it from Barnes & Noble for the Nook or the Amazon Kindle. It's available any place.
It's there. Okay. And your website we've got linked up at coasttocoastam.com. What got you to St. Louis from New York?
Well, my sister has lived out here for many years. She lived in Ladue for about 20 years, and now she's out in Chesterfield. And I came out to give her a little help with some problems she has. Incidentally, I just was going to give you, talking about China, and I just thought you might appreciate this item because it's so incredible. And we've just found out about this recently, and maybe you've heard of this. China has built a vast internal security system in which they can analyze the records of 1.3 million of their citizens in less than 12 minutes.
Wow.
And this system is hooked up to security cameras all over the country. For instance, in Shenzhen City, they have almost 800,000 cameras.
What are they paranoid about? Jeez.
Well, they want it, and this is all hooked into a facial recognition system. So suppose they want to find you.
Chances are they will.
They will very easily find you because not only do they know everything about you, but they can find you.
Wow.
So it's virtually impossible to move around the country except in rural areas that they don't know exactly at all times what you're doing.
God, they're paranoid. Let's go to the calls. John is in Arizona to get us started. Go ahead, John. You're on with Richard Austin.
Yeah, hey, Guy, I'm in my 60s, and I've been hearing people talk about the end of the world for 40 years or so. Remember that guy, Hal Lindsey, late great planner,
yep,
talked about, you know, and the end of the world is going to come in 1988 because 40 years is in the Bible, and 1981 will start the tribulation and this and that. None of this stuff ever went down, you know. And there are already literally hundreds of thousands of Chinese living all over eastern Russia. I know this, you know, I'm part Russian. I've talked to people. They're moving in there like illegals are coming across our border. You know, they actually, people want them in there. They bring business money. You know, there's no big tunnel systems, and, you know, you're going to take over like 800 million square miles of Siberia with a tank that crawls up a mountain. Come on, bro. You know that ain't going to happen, you know. And the Russians have way more nuclear weapons than the Chinese do. They're way more technologically advanced. And besides that, you ever heard of MAD? I know you have, right?
Oh, yeah.
Third destruction.
You got
this
it.
This isn't going to happen. They're not going to a neutron bomb. And he said something about how the Chinese said that they were going to attack the Russians with neutron bombs to kill. Actually, the facts are, at the beginning of the Cold War, the Chinese said they would give the Russians all these troops to invade during the Korean War. And the Russians said, hey, your troops mean nothing against modern nuclear weapons. We don't need millions of troops to conquer. And they were right. So, you know, all this is just, you know, I don't believe any of it. I really don't. And
I hope you're right, John.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the guy is just, you know, he's just, you know, there's just another way to make money with a book. And I'll just sign off and dusty done you, Tavadish.
So you do have some skeptics out there, Richard, that don't think this is Armageddon.
Well, I guess they built all those bomb shelters for nothing. And he says there's no tunnel system. I hate to tell you, there is a tunnel system, and they've been building it since now the time of Mao Zedong, and it's an historical fact. So why would you build all those systems to keep troops underground and protect citizens and build ghost cities? And don't forget, they also have underground submarine bases now along the coast, we've discovered.
How old would your friend Lawrence be today if he were still around?
I think Lawrence would be about in his late 50s.
50s. Yeah, I mean, there's that possibility he's in a jail somewhere, isn't there?
I doubt it. That's not the way they operate. They get rid of you pretty quickly over there.
Yeah, if you're a spy.
Well,
They probably figured nobody knows who he is. He's not public. And the only ones who will know will be the CIA, and they will disavow any knowledge that he existed. So you may be right. They just extinguished him.
Well, you see, they only lock people up, for instance, in the Logi, which is their work camps in that those vast work camps out in the hinterland. They only keep the people around if they can be productive and produce something. Otherwise, they just eliminate.
Yeah. Let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Joe, you're up with us. Go ahead.
How are you? I wanted to ask your guest, Richard Austin, as far as this Armageddon thing goes, how does it tie in with Revelation and the opening of the seals? And also, I might mention that one of my songs is called 21st Century Armageddon.
Perfect. Those seals, have they all opened up yet? There's one more left, isn't there?
Well, that's one of the revelations is Armageddon. And you have those vials of God's wrath, and the last vial is poured out with the episode known as Armageddon. So it's I'm not quite sure what his question is, but that's the climactic event that's referred to in a couple of places there in the Book of Revelation.
One of the symbols, of course, on the seventh seal, the last seal, will be hearing trumpets. And the people have been hearing strange things out there. You never
I
know.
had a look here at the seventh seal.
And the first, of course, was the white horse, the red horse, the black horse, the pale horse, all the souls of martyrs, a great earthquake. We may have had that already with Fukushima. And then seven angels. So who knows? You think Fukushima may have been a sign?
I think Fukushima was a very bad piece of design work that they never thought that they would have the ocean come in that high. And
You think it's a symbol, though, of Armageddon or part of it?
I'm not so sure there's any connection there.
Okay.
I think it's pretty clear that the and John of Patmos refers to the kings of the East and what they were going to do. I think he was just talking about a major land war there in East Asia.
That could be. Let's go to Ed in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Go ahead, Ed.
George, Richard, I appreciate you guys taking my call. I'd like to
Sure.
run this by you. Now, no disrespect, Richard, okay? But now, here's the thing. I have been studying the Book of Revelation now going on several years. I've got it on audio CDs, the King James Version. And the Book of Revelation specifically states in there, the Antichrist is going to come to power in chapter 6, and the false prophet works with the Antichrist to set up this beast system. Now, the Battle of Armageddon is all about fighting against God, against Jesus Christ and the Israelis. Now, here's how it's going to go down as I figure it. The first battle, the first conflict before they ratify that peace agreement between Israel and what's left of the Arab nations, I noticed I said what's left of them, that will bring them to the peace table to try and sign the peace agreement. At that time, the Antichrist, you'll know who he is at that time if you're still here, and he will have the temple built because he will rule from that temple. Okay, now, there'll be peace for 3.5 years. After that 3.5 years, then the Great Tribulation kicks in high gear. Russia with the Persian army and what's left of the Arab nations, once again, will enter the kingdom trying to destroy Israel and do battle against Jesus Christ and his forces. Jesus Christ will come back on a white horse, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, with his saints with him, destroying and slaying these armies. The Chinese will come through the Euphrates. They'll try their luck at it. They'll be decimated, destroyed. And once again, the European army and the Antichrist with the beast system will come through there, and they'll all be decimated for their efforts. And this whole thing, the Battle of Armageddon, is all about trying to destroy Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, and the Jews. Now, understand something. Okay, the 7-year tribulation is all about the Jews. It's called the 70th week of Daniel. The purpose of it is to bring the Jews back into the fold of knowing who their Savior is. Bear in mind, Jesus Christ is Jewish. He's trying to get his people back into the fold to know who the Jews, to know who their Savior is. As you well know, a lot of Jews don't, they deny that. Well, that's what this is all about. Now, let me add one more thing to it. That seven-year tribulation is going to be the most horrific time the human race can ever imagine. When you read the book of Revelation, I've got it on audio CD so I can listen to it. And, man, I'm telling you, there's going to be a star called Wormwood that's going to collide with the earth. It's going to cause the waters to go bitter, killing one-third of the life in the waters. Now, okay, and let me just fast forward through all the vials and the judgments that's going to pour down on the earth. Now, the people that take that mark of the beast during that tribulation period, they're done, man. They're cooked. They're cooked. Their destination will be hell after that.
And what do you think the mark could be at? A chip? A computer chip?
This is interesting. You know, George, okay, I've been doing some study on that. Now, remember the other night when I talked to you, I said L.A. Mazzulli and Dr. Richard Lear, you know, they took these implants out of these extraterrestrials, and they put them in a cup of blood, and they grew back together, which means they had the a capability to alter one's DNA. Now, I think that what's going to happen at some time, they're going to introduce that chip, and I think this was simply an experiment that they were creating, and they were using abductees to experiment with this chip that's going to be presented to the people at some point in time. They're going to tell everybody, listen, if you'll just take this chip under your right hand or your forehead, and it tells you in the book of Revelation, I mean, even a kindergartner can understand it. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand what it's saying in there. And I believe that's what it'll be. Now, George, let me throw something in here real quick before I lose track. The extraterrestrials, Chuck Misler is one of my mentors. This guy, Chuck, I mean, you got to, hey, George, I got to tell you this. I listened to a video earlier tonight that said, Chuck Misler, the Bible and UFOs and the coming deception. When you get time, if you don't have anything to do, if you have a moment free,
me?
Sit down and listen to that, man. Listen to
oh,
that.
Oh, no, I have. I have. And we've had Chuck on the program. I've got to get a couple more callers, but I want to get your reaction, Richard, to we didn't talk about the Antichrist, which was in Revelation. Do you have any idea who that individual might be?
Well, this gentleman has come up with a lot of things there that was a little hard for me to follow. He's got quite a lot of thoughts on this subject, and I'm not quite sure I know how to respond here, so maybe...
But I mean, did you do any research into the Antichrist, who that person may be? Because it is in Revelation.
Well, that's... The whole subject of the Antichrist has been a debated... I actually haven't formed an opinion on
you have not. Okay. All right. That's fair. Let's go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hi, Barry.
Hello there, George. Once again, a pleasure. And I beat Cornelius on tonight, so that's okay.
He's not even there.
I know it. Listen, I want to jump back with Richard. It's wonderful to talk to what I call a biochemist, and you remember, Tommy does too, some of my background in biochemistry without a PhD. But anyway, I'm very well educated, and the neutron bomb, it fascinated me in 1970 when I graduated from college, and then all of a sudden everything went away. I would love for Richard to tell us what he knows about the neutron bomb, and is there anything going on with future research? And anyway, that's a good enough question right there, and it's always a pleasure, George, and we'll talk again Friday night during Open Line.
All right, Barry, thanks. The neutron bomb, which is what you think the Chinese will use, I have to assume we have one too. Do we not, Richard?
Well, I'm very glad the listener raised that question, because the theft of the neutron bomb is a fascinating story. They stole it in the late 70s, but they couldn't get it to work. they had all of the information, so they had to come back and steal it a second time in the early 80s.
Oh, and they did. They were successful doing that, were they not?
And then they had it. Then they were able to make it work. And that's when, once the Chinese knew they had that bomb, that's when there was a very noticeable shift in their foreign policy. What Deng Xiaoping then did was to provide nuclear information to Pakistan and also non-nuclear armaments to Iran.
And Pakistan gave it to North Korea.
Yes, and also gave it to Libya. And Gaddafi gave the plans to us. And, of course, they're written in Chinese.
Right, right. Gaddafi basically washed his hands of the whole thing.
Yes. So they do have the neutron bomb. It's a, if you want to have a colonize a vast area and take it over, it's the perfect device. Hitler, if can you imagine if Hitler and Stalin had the neutron bomb?
Disasters. Can you imagine if Hitler had the atomic bomb?
Exactly.
He would have used it on London and God knows where else.
You bet he would have.
Well, so be it. Richard, we are out of time. Let's keep in touch and let's hope that you're wrong, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's in the not distant future, we will find out if I'm wrong. And if I am, I'm delighted. I want to be.
You want to be wrong.
I want to be wrong. I'm probably the only guy who spent years researching a book who wants to be wrong.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Richard. Richard Austin, of course, the book, The Coming of Armageddon. And I hope he's wrong. Oh, boy. Do I hope he's wrong. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Bowles, and George Knapp, I'm George Inori, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.